hanging around. Thank you for staying alongside with us. We come to the second half, and we were just saying how wonderful your life was and how great your marriage to Chris was, and the marriage was great and the holidays were great and everything was great, and it's not really how the story continued, is it? There's beginning to be a bit of a pattern here, but we'll not worry about that just for the time being. Tell us what happened.
Well, he went to, December 2000, he went to the office party, and basically he said that, you know, spouses were not able to attend because it was done, which I know some companies do it, it's only for the employees. And he went out and he didn't come back till about 4:30 in
and
the morning.
And this was the Christmas office party?
Yeah. And I knew there was something wrong. Because normally when he's had a drink, he's on the phone, he says, I love you, will you pick me up, and all this sort of stuff. And this time, he just seemed to be wanting to get me off the phone. And anyway, he said he was coming home by taxi, not to bother to pick him up. And I just had a feeling, and I did tell him that before we got married, that if he ever was unfaithful, I would know. Woman's intuition. But anyway, I found out when he did come home, I just went to bed, and I waited, and I confronted him, and I said, who is she? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, you've been with someone else. Who is it? And at first, I thought it was my friend, but I found out later, because a little bit of spying, I found out that it was the one he said it was, the woman from work. And at the time, I asked him, and he said, this woman from work. And I said, do you love her? He wouldn't answer. So I asked him again. I said, do you love her? Because had he have said, I don't know what's going on, I don't know how I feel or whatever, then I would have said to him, let's talk about it, let's go counselling, let's do this, that and the other. But no. So I said, okay, you love her. That's your answer. No answer is the answer. And so he moved out. He decided to go off to his mother's house in Wales. He went there for a week. He said he was going to, sort things out in his mind. So I said, fair enough. Then he comes back and he goes to live with his father for a week as well. And in between that, he's coming back to my house and he's going to get CDs and he's going off there. And I thought, I can't go on like this. You know, he's not even talking to me about anything. Anyway, I thought, right, this, you know, I've got to make a decision. He's not doing anything. He's not talking about, and you know, he's just saying that he loves this woman or whatever. And so in January, I started proceedings for divorce. And
well, before we get onto that, because if we were judging you harshly, we might want to say, oh, come on, Anita, you could have given him a second chance, or you could have, you know. But prior to all of this, his job had changed, hasn't it? He'd gone into business on his own, and that business had then failed, and you had to step in at that point.
Well, what happened was when I got married in 98, before I got married, I sold my house, and the proceeds of that I'd put in my deposit account. Well, then he started up his own business and went in with this guy from New Zealand who came over, and they basically set up together. And so obviously he paid some money for the bank. You know, he had a bank loan. And when when that failed, I said to him, I knew this guy, I don't trust him. Because what his partner did was he used his girlfriend to pretend to be the financial director of the company. And then they went to the bank. And I found this out later. But I warned him about it. And I said, you're best getting out of it now before it goes too far. And so anyway, because he had this bank loan, in order to get rid of the joint finance, I gave him some of my money, and he then I helped him to get another job after this, and I thought, well, he's going to be able to pay that back to me, because he's earning 80,000, and I think he was getting £15,000 bonus at Christmas.
So in the city. Big job in the city.
In the city, yeah. And so I didn't think anything of it. So that happened, and the other payments were made. And of course, when I went to the solicitor.
So let's before you get to the solicitor. So the situation we're in is you've paid out a lot of your savings to support him, to bail him out, and he gets the job in the city, and that's where he meets the girl that that he leaves you for.
Mm.
It's a fairly rubbish scenario, really, isn't it? I mean, it is one of those things that you kind of want to say, well, you're better off out of it than you are in it. But getting out of it in itself was difficult, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, because my sister gave me the name of a company that she was working for, a firm of solicitors. And I said I wasn't working, I weren't earning enough. And he said that he would take on the case if we gave, my family contributed £25 up each towards the cost of the disbursements part of it. And then he was hoping, because he said I had a good case, that at the end of it, then I would get my money back. And what happened, we found out that he was bent, is the word. And when we got the first bill, I think it was about 14,000, was it, Marlene? Anyway, Marlene found out on what happened was the secretary, we asked for the ledger, and the secretary, lovely, I think his help was there, she gave the ledger, she must have photocopied the main ledger and put yellow copies over certain information there that's relating to another client. And there also was the copy. So they'd sent, whoever it was, sent the original plus the copy so that we knew what was happening. So Marlene was helping me with the legal side of that. And
but it cost you a huge amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, the first bill was about 1,400, I think.
When we talked 14,000, you got another one for 25,000.
Yeah.
And all of this you weren't expecting to have to pay.
No.
So when we chatted, you said it was at this point that really life fell through the floor for you. And in 2006, you were driving around. And tell everybody what was on your heart then.
I just felt suicidal. I had thoughts of suicide, but I didn't want to be able to do it myself. I thought if I drive around, someone might crash into me or whatever. I just wanted to be out of this world, really.
But nobody did crash into you. You didn't. Was it a hand of God that stopped anything happening?
Nature. Nature called, because I wanted to go to the toilet. So I ended up going all the way home. And because during that time I was in my car, my sister was trying to contact me. Everyone was trying to get hold of me, and I just didn't answer the phone. And of course, then I turned up, and my mum and my sister were relieved. And I just said, well, I needed to go to the toilet. So then Marlene talked to me, and, you know, she said, don't be silly. And, you know, that's how it sort of ended then.
And then the next day, you're on the bus to Bromley.
That was I think that was when I was, everything was sort of building up on me, and all the expense and everything. And
so you got on the 227.
I got on the 227 bus to Bromley.
And what happened on the 227 bus to Bromley?
Well, first of all, as I was sitting on the bus, and the driver was racing along, and all of a sudden a lady called Maureen Bentley, was walking, and then she started running, and the bus driver stopped. And as she came in, I sort of moved over my chair. Most people don't. They just, I don't know why. But anyway, she came in, and I said, oh, that's unusual for the bus drivers to stop, because normally they whiz by and laugh and leave you dangling behind, you know, you're waiting for the bus. Anyway, we started chatting, and she told me that she had had an operation, a very serious one. She had a valve, heart valve, placed into her, and she said that she nearly died, and she said that, you know, she's lucky to be alive, and she's really blessed that she's able to see her grandchildren grow up. And I told her the things that were happening to me, and I just felt so low. And so what she did, she took me to one side and in Market Square in Bromley, and she asked me if she could say the prayer of salvation. And it was quite touching for me, because I thought, how can some stranger come along and do that for me? You know, it's different if it was a vicar. Yeah. But someone, why would she want to do that? So I thought, she said, would you mind if I said the prayer with you? So I said no. And I felt really, it was just a really strange feeling. And then she said, would you mind having a cup of, should we go for coffee afterwards? Well, we spent 2 hours in the cafe. Must have drank all that coffee. And we just got on so well. And that must have...
When she said to you, this mad woman you'd never met before, this religious nutcase on a bus, and she said to you, you know, having heard your woes, would you like to pray a prayer of salvation? For some of us, that's we'd know that as giving your life to Christ. For others, asking Jesus into your heart. Why ever did you say yes? It's not normal, is it, to say yes to that kind of thing?
She was just an amazing person, an amazing woman. And she had great skill in talking to people, talking to strangers. And I saw a lot of that, you know, when I went out with her and things. She just had such a warm heart, a very loving heart. And that's what got me.
And that sense of a loving heart, that sense of her reaching out to you in that way, you felt that more and more then, didn't you? Mm-hmm. She invited you to the ladies' breakfast here at Christchurch.
I will say one thing. When this was the morning after, I remember literally sliding down the wall where I was living at that time and thinking, God help me, because I can't do this on my own anymore. It's too much for me. And I said, if you're listening, please help me. And the following day was when I met Mo. And that was just, I couldn't believe it.
So she was really sent by the Lord.
I believe so, yeah, definitely.
And then when you went to the ladies' breakfast, it was Fiona Castle was speaking at the ladies' breakfast. Mm. And you were on the top table.
Yep.
And you found yourself, as she gave her testimony, in, you know, really quite moved by that. Mm. You were saying how you were quite embarrassed to be crying on the top table.
I was, because it just flowed. And it was like all the pain and suffering that I'd experienced prior to that had just been zapped out of me. And I just felt so good. It felt wonderful.
When we chatted about this, Anita said the most fabulous thing, and I don't know if you even realise the kind of dual meaning of what you said, but she was talking about the ladies' breakfast, and she said, the thing is, it was amazing grace what got me. It was amazing grace what done it, she said. And now you're referring to it was being played...
On the trumpet, but not by Tim. I really...
We thought it was Tim
no,
Cook.
No, it's not.
Tim Fox who was playing
him.
The trumpet, but it was somebody
no.
else.
Someone that looked like him.
Somebody who looked like it. There's not many people look like Tim Fox.
But I didn't have my glasses on. Glasses on at the time.
You didn't have your glasses on at the time. Well, you must really need glasses if it wasn't Tim Fox, but you thought it might have been. But that sense of the amazing grace of God, His incredible love for you. That really took hold of you at that time, didn't it?
I felt there was so much love in that room, and I felt at peace. And it was those feelings that really changed me from that moment on. And then Maureen suggested, well, call her Mo, she suggested, you know, I said that I've been looking, felt something was missing in my life, but I didn't know what. And I wanted to find a church locally to see if I could go in. She gave an idea of different churches around here, but she didn't force me to come here. I went around the other ones and I didn't like, I wasn't particularly happy with them. And then she suggested I come here. She said, well, try this one. And as soon as I came through that door, the welcoming that I got from my church family was amazing. It was really loving and warm. And I felt I'd come home.
One of the people who was very important to you at the time was Harriet Wynne Jones, the wife of the vicar at the time. And she led you into the Psalms, and Psalm 91 in particular was important to you. And we'll just listen to Psalm 91 now.
Psalm 91. Those who live in the shelter of the Most High will find rest in the shadow of the Almighty. This I declare about the Lord. He alone is my refuge, my place of safety. He is my God, and I trust him. For he will rescue you from every trap and protect you from deadly disease. He will cover you with his feathers. He will shelter you with his wings. His faithful promises are your armor and protection. Don't be afraid of the terrors of the night, nor the arrow that flies in the day. Don't dread the disease that stalks in darkness, nor the disaster that strikes at midday. Though 1,000 fall at your side, though 10,000 are dying around you, these evils will not touch you. Just open your eyes and see how the wicked are punished. If you make the Lord your refuge, if you make the Most High your shelter, no evil will conquer you. No plague will come near your home. For he will order his angels to protect you wherever you go. They will hold you up with their hands, so you won't even hurt your foot on a stone. You will trample upon lions and cobras. You will crush fierce lions and serpents under your feet. The Lord says, I will rescue those who love me. I will protect those who trust in my name. When they call on me, I will answer. I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue and honor them. I will reward them with a long life and give them my salvation.
They are tremendous words. And thinking about everything that you've been through, your hunger for that sense of security and that sense of peace and that sense of safety must have been really keen in you. Do you think that's why it was such an important and still is such an important psalm to you?
Yeah.
The problem with it is, Anita, that it didn't really go like that, did it?
No.
Because the story has gone on, and the sense of no trouble coming to your door and no difficulty coming towards you hasn't really been how the story has gone on, has it? As far as I can work out, there were two more house moves, some not planned, in fact, most not planned. There was more difficulty with finances because benefits were stopped and because you weren't able to work because of health reasons. And then Mum got really ill, and there was problems with house moves. And then when Mum died, the council lovingly said you couldn't stay in the house anymore. And even just after we moved you, and we helped you to move Ed and Chris and Margie and myself and Lyndon and Josephine. We helped you to move. A couple of days after that, the dog ran into the road, and the dog got run over. Mm. It's a catalogue of catastrophes, really, isn't it? And I want to ask you, when you think about that psalm, which is still important to you, have you ever said to God, enough is enough? Enough is enough, Lord. I've had enough. Where are you? Where have you been? Have you ever said that since that day? No.
No.
I wonder if you're aware how not unique you are, but actually how your faith is perhaps has been honed, perhaps has been refined, perhaps is stronger than you might at first think. I wonder if you consider yourself to be a great saint.
No. Far from it.
Far from it. Well, I don't know. I think, you know, the thing is, we've listened to your story this evening, and we could turn to you and say, well, you made a mess of a lot of things there, didn't you, Anita? But actually, what we've heard is a story of somebody who has gone through life's ups and downs, just like many people go through. Maybe different ups and downs to the person who sits next to you on the bus or in the church or wherever it might be. But there'll be people here tonight who are facing ups and downs repeatedly. People who are facing struggles and trials and don't really know how to have the same kind of smile on their face as you perpetually seem to do. What would your advice be to them?
To pray. Because my prayers have been answered. Sometimes not in the way I expected, but they are answered.
Is that enough for you?
Well, my life is nearly sorted. And I can laugh again. I've been through a roller coaster ride, but it strengthened me. And there is a saying as well, I can do all things through him who strengthens me.
And it is a fantastic verse. What makes Anita's statement even more significant is that just at the moment, Anita's son, Anita's daughter, Gemma, we've got some photographs of Gemma, Gemma with Ryan, who's the dark-haired eldest son, Anita's eldest grandchild, and then Tommy, the blonde one. And then the two twins, who have we got with the two twins?
Rose and Jack.
Rose and Jack.
Rose is named after my mum.
And when they were born, it wasn't straightforward, was it?
No. The landlord that she was with decided to text her, giving notice to quit. But she was pregnant with twins at the time. And that was on the 16th of May. And she got rushed to hospital on the 17th. And she had a premature labour. And she nearly died. And my Jack nearly died as well. My daughter had a lung infection. She had an asthma attack whilst unconscious. And she had a C-section. And the babies were kept in hospital for some time. I'm glad to say now they've recovered. And
all through that you prayed?
Yes. And I even got my daughter to pray as well.
And you even got your daughter to pray?
And my family.
And yet still, we want to say that, you know, there you are smiling because they came through that, and yet they still got essentially chucked out of the house they were living in. And on the 4th of March this year, they moved into a flat in Catford. Mm. And we're now at the 17th of March, and they still don't have a cooker.
No.
And they still don't have a fridge. And they still don't have a washing machine.
Oh, no, she's got a washing
machine. She's got a washing machine.
The only reason she's got a washing machine was the landlord's one broke. It had a dryer to it. And when they moved in, when she moved in, he said that was broken.
But she's got no cooker.
No.
And she's got no fridge.
No. My sister, my two sisters paid for her to have a washing machine. They got a reconditioned one.
And you still sit there, and you still smile, and you still say, life is getting better. And you still pray, and you still trust the Lord.
Mm.
What would you do if you didn't have that?
I wouldn't be here today if I didn't have that.
When you got confirmed 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, Enid Danson, who some of you, many of you will know, sent you one of her famous homemade cards. And in it she wrote, from Colossians 2, 6 and 7, as you therefore have received Christ Jesus the Lord, continue to live your lives in him, rooted and built up in him, established in the faith, just as you were taught, abounding in thanksgiving. Anita, tonight you have really shown us the embodiment of what that verse is, that as you have received Jesus Christ your Lord, you have continued your life in him. And in the midst of everything that you've gone through and your family is going through, you are continuing to be built up and to be full of thanksgiving. And we want to say thank you to you tonight for what you've shared with us, such personal stuff, particularly in front of family and friends. It's different if you knew nobody. You might.
Yeah, I would have been at... I would have felt nervous then. But
you felt more nervous if you'd known nobody.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. But we've received from you that real inspiration to be people of greater thanksgiving for what the Lord is doing in our lives, and greater faith to know that even though life can be tough, God is greater. Anita, we want to thank you very much for being in conversation with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anita. Thank you for coming. The next Sunday conversation will be in May after Easter, and we'll get details out to you as soon as we can about the speaker for that evening. But once again, can I thank you for coming and wish you a very safe journey home tonight. If you want to talk to Anita, or if you want to talk through any issues that you have heard that have raised questions in you, please find me or Luke, the curate, is here if you'd like to talk with somebody. And if you want to pray with somebody, as Anita says, that's the thing to do, then again, we're happy to pray with you. If you want to just take us to one side, we'd be glad to do that. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you.